Hello, listeners, and welcome back to The Political Impact. I'm your host, Kelsey Hickman, and thank you so much for joining us today for episode 5 on Radio Laurier, centered around the political issue of climate change and what we now recognize as the climate crisis. Due to the rising temperatures of our climate, you can't talk about the environment and global warming without including politics anymore. It is too severe of an issue not to involve the international community and state governments as we try to find a conclusive resolution to this issue. The problems of climate change is one that the entire world can relate to, and not one individual on Earth can shy away from. It's something that is going to heavily impact all of us, and that is impacting us on different severities now. There is a lot of scientific research on the issue of climate change, and particularly for the state of Canada, we have been studying and observing changes that are unprecedented since the 1950s. Canada is changing through rising temperatures and shifting rainfall patterns and increasing in certain types of hazardous weather across the country. It has been determined by the international community through COP26 and the Paris Accord that we are likely to increase our global temperatures by 2 degrees. Particularly in the most recent COP26, we have decided that we're going to try and reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 40% to 70%. The international or state level issue of reducing carbon dioxide emissions is a big target for lots of states across the world right now. And based on the global 2% increase of our climate change, Canada is projected to rise approximately by 4 degrees. However, where we are at right now with all of our industrial levels, Canada is projected to rise to 9.5 degrees, according to canada.ca/environment. The issue of climate change is not one that will be solved overnight, and it's not one that will be solved by one individual or one state. It is a collective solution that must take place with coordinated global action to address climate change and to try and save our planet. So today, I'm going to talk to you guys about what students can do and how students can get involved in being part of the solution here at Laurier. I got the pleasure to interview coordinator of the Wilfrid Laurier University EcoHawks, coordinator Caitlin Ricks. So Caitlin got to be on the podcast, and we talked a lot about eco-anxiety and sustainable practices that students can input into their lives to uphold a green thumb and lessen their carbon footprint as individuals and joining the community of being a better eco-friendly student. So without further ado, here's the interview. Okay, hello everyone, and welcome back to The Political Impact. I'm here today with Caitlin Ricks, and we're talking all about her club, EcoHawks Waterloo. Hi Caitlin, how are you today?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm good. So let's start off the conversation. You can introduce yourself, who you are, and what you're studying at Laurier.
For sure. So so I'm in my fourth year here at Laurier. I'm currently completing my major in biology with a concentration specialization in ecology, biodiversity, and evolution. And then I'm also doing a chemistry minor in environmental science option. So that's the broad of everything, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Wow. So what is EcoHawks Waterloo? And what if you could tell us a little bit about when the club was started and how?
For sure. So EcoHawks definitely varies depending who the coordinator is each year as to what the main goals that we want to reach for it. I became the coordinator last year, so this is my second full year being a coordinator. My main goal that I've noticed I would like to get across to all students is finding easy ways to be sustainable and easy ways to kind of reduce your carbon footprint and essentially find the easy ways to do things, because a lot of people are so overwhelmed that there's so many different ways. So my main goal is, how can you live your life just a little bit more greener? Nothing too crazy, but the broad of it.
Right, just the beginning steps, really.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's so many students here that just are so overwhelmed by the idea and don't feel like that they should help or that they can help. But it's, in reality, it's so easy to just make a small change in your everyday lifestyle that will overall in the end help, I guess. As far as when it was started, I don't know the exact founder and year that it was started, but I'm pretty sure that EcoHawks was one of the staple committees that the Students' Union brought to Laurier when it first opened up, as well as Foot Patrol, the emergency response team, like all those committees. I'm pretty sure that it was a staple that we must have X, Y, and Z, and we were one of them.
Awesome. So it is something that other schools have, or is this specific to Laurier?
I'm pretty sure that most universities have some kind of sustainable team. Even in my high school, there was like an eco team. I think it just depends on, I guess, the funding that they have and the involvement that the Students' Union has with the club or committee, which can differentiate if it's a club or a committee. Mm-hmm. So I know that like EcoHawks Brantford has one as well, obviously.
Oh, perfect. Yeah,
it's a bit smaller. I think it just depends on the school size as well. But from my understanding, that every university has a couple staple things, like Foot Patrol. Every school has some kind of safe walking system.
Okay, awesome. And how did you get involved in the club exactly? And then what does being an executive on EcoHawks mean to you?
I got involved in the club in my second year. In my first year, I was just trying to get by. So I didn't really do anything. And then I realized that EcoHawks that Laurier itself is known for being such a student involvement place with clubs and communities. And I was like, well, there definitely is at least one thing that I think I would like. And then I remember like the following day or whatever it was, I saw a booth in the concourse for EcoHawks. I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty interesting. And I didn't know I had to apply to be in the club, like through the Students' Union hiring and recruitment page. And it was just coincidental that the day I checked was the day applications were due. So I'm like,
oh,
well,
wow,
guess I'm whipping up something tonight.
Yeah, like fate almost.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. So all of my second year, I was on EcoHawks as just as a general member. And then after that, the coordinator at that time was stepping down as coordinator for whatever the case was. So there was a lot of conversation about hiring for executives and for the coordinator role. So initially, I applied just as an executive because I didn't fully know how everything worked. And then no one else applied for the coordinator role. And I was like, well, why not? Why? So I ended up applying for that. And I got in, obviously. But for executives, the difference between coordinator and executives is slightly different, but essentially it's the same goals and initiatives that we have to do. Since there is, how I run the team is every executive has their own subcommittee. So, sorry, oh my goodness. So everyone has a chance to do their own thing. So I have an executive for marketing. I have an executive for community outreach, executive for campus outreach, executive for events and logistics, an executive that works with special events that works primarily with the sustainability office.
So maybe as an overall group, what are some objectives that you EcoHawks want to accomplish this year? Maybe through initiatives or through events that you have coming up, anything like that?
For sure. So overall initiatives, every one of the execs has their own kind of thing that they are working towards. I have pretty much opened up this whole year as to what are some things that you guys want to see? What are some things that you guys want to work towards? Because I have a team of 50 people. So oh, if wow. I just decide by myself, I'm going to have 30 people that are like, that's not a good idea. So I kind of opened it up. There's a lot more ideas than what I just have. So allowing everyone to kind of pick which subcommittee that they want to be a part in and work towards certain things, it gives everyone an opportunity to set goals independently and make their involvement meaningful in the way that they hope it to be. That's something that I definitely think is the most important thing. There was a really big stress in our committee towards eco-anxiety with the climate change happening and so many things going around that. So I think a few weeks ago, we actually did a huge week-long event on eco-anxiety.
That one of the could you maybe define what eco-anxiety, like what you're trying to gauge at, what that means exactly?
For sure. So how I see eco-anxiety, it's primarily displayed in our generation. So, and how I see it as someone that sees the world essentially going down the drain and seeing people constantly not making a difference or feeling as if they are unable to make a difference. It could be as simple as people littering or not recycling properly, or seeing so many different people not caring. I think there's just a whole well-rounded idea that people don't care about where we live in the world in the future, that there's been a lot of anxiety about what our world is going to become and what will happen, because we are the generation that's going to be living through this. So we try to kind of focus on the mental aspect of it, as how can you get the support that you need if you are struggling with anxiety or any form of depression due to the environmental concerns that we have, and how can we incorporate everyday things in our life to make us feel that we are valued and important and that we are trying our best every day to do our part in the ecosystem. I think that's
right. As individuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understand what you mean by that. From a political perspective, it seems a little bit doomsday. There's a lot of information, a lot of research out there that is proving through science that we are in a crisis. Our climate is rapidly changing and we're not going to be able to live the same way that we have been for so many years. And I think it can be very scary for Generation Z to see that and have not see very many conclusive or concrete solutions, even though we have all this research and we have all this proof that this is happening. I mean, even look at BC and their severe rainstorms that are going on right now, and they're flooding. So how are we not actively trying to dismantle this crisis? I think there's a disconnect definitely between our generation and the government when it comes to the climate crisis.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I feel that from one of the classes that I've taken, it was kind of more on the government side of everything, and based off of my very brief knowledge and also real life examples, there are a lot of people that are in a political platform. They say things people want to hear and they don't actually follow through with those things completely, or to check off the box completely. I think that definitely has something to do. And a lot of powerful people try to just buy their votes with, yeah, I'm for sure going to do this, or we're going to do this to help the environment, just to make sure everyone's issues are addressed, and then essentially not follow through with those things. I definitely think it's very misleading, the government side of it, but you always hope that people are good. But
well, it's interesting that you use the term buy votes, because something that I briefly touched on this podcast is the the political issue of short-term versus long-term solutions, and how you say many politicians are just trying to get reelected. So they focus on the short-term solutions of different issues that they can solve during that four-year span. Climate change is not necessarily something that's been 4 years to conduct and something that's going to take 4 years to change. So it's definitely an issue that is talked about more, but is it something that when you get in office, you're going to change? And I understand that that apathy and that push aside because it's not the number one thing on the agenda that they can do in 4 years. So was 4 years enough to you for a specific government or specific party to make those changes that they want to see for the climate?
I definitely think climate change is a long-term solution, something that we need to constantly work on. I just think that there's more things that can happen in 4 years than what we've seen in the past. Maybe that's just my opinion on it, right. But there's so many things I think that we can improve that doesn't take too long. Just the use of plastics, mm-hmm. or the use of shipping or fisheries, or just spreading. A big thing I think is spreading more information about what is going on. That doesn't mean that the government or whoever is making huge changes, but it's more so giving the straight facts about what's going on and letting you make the decision. Essentially, it's the idea with smoking on the smoking bags. It tells you, or on the smoking packages, it tells you the risks. It tells you, it gives you the brutal image.
Right.
And then,
and that's part of legislation, right? Tobacco companies need to put that on because the government has made legislation outlawing false advertisement, mm-hmm. on smoking. So definitely, that's a great point. I think that is something that seems insignificant to the bigger scale, but can really change a lot of people's minds on the products that they buy and make them more eco-conscious.
Yeah. And one other thing I was thinking about this last week, I was having a conversation with a couple of other people, was almost making, based off of our status in the world, is almost making a required course in high school of you take an environmental course, kind of like how you're required to take French, just at least for 1 year in high school, right. Take an environmental course, or some other universities just have a standardized, you must take these three courses. Normally it's not an environmental anything. Normally it's like take a course on referencing and take a course on this or a crash course on this, just to have a general background with the university. But I feel even mandating some form of required course or education or certificate that we have to move forward, I think that could essentially just make a huge difference. But then that brings up the whole point with funding and paying for those services. So,
and I do think that it is ingrained a little bit in elementary and secondary education in Ontario, specifically learning about, I remember growing up and having a sustainability unit in my science class, right? So that is a little something to have a unit for that. But then what happens when you actually grow up and it's your turn to make those decisions, it's your turn to make those purchases, and to have that eco-friendly foot or green thumb. And then we don't have any more of those courses. So that's an interesting point to have a post-secondary environmental class. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're talking about maybe a systematic level, but let's bring it down a little bit to an individual level, to our the listeners and to you and me. So what does being eco-conscious mean to you?
I think just knowing the outcomes of your actions is a huge thing. And, you know, switching to just an easier substitution, for example, just drinking like a water bottle instead of a plastic water bottle. When you go to the grocery store, using reusable produce bags instead of the plastic bags, or bringing your own grocery bags instead of using grocery bags, or if you have to use the plastic grocery bags, don't throw them out after you're done, repurpose them. I think a lot of it is just repurposing items that you have and not going out and buying everything new all of the time. Yeah, I definitely think there's so much about this topic that can be talked about. But essentially, I think just being like knowing the outcomes of your actions and understanding what you're doing throughout the day. Something simple as unplugging your printer saves like $200 on your hydro bill a year. You're not using it. Just simple things like that. Or for your mental health, incorporating more plants or green space or windows or light in your study spaces and making sure you're going outside for yourself and using the environment to your advantage in that sense.
Yeah, going outside is a huge one, especially during COVID times. That seems so simple and insignificant, but really breathing in fresh air should never be something that is taken for granted. So why is it important for students to be a part of the conversation when it comes to saving our climate?
I think it's the most important because it's our future and it's our children's future. Even people that are like, oh no, I don't want kids, I don't care. Well, maybe don't be as self-centered. It's a big heart. A lot of people are very self-centered and I think all people are just very selfish in that way. I think it's hard because, you know, you want to think that you're doing good and you're helping when you can, but also you don't want to be shamed on when you're having a plastic water bottle in your hand. It's hard in that sense as well. I think just the biggest part, it's important to be about a conversation because it's your future. And if it's going to help you, and if you can do a simple, small, easy thing throughout your day, why not?
Absolutely. And I think it's also a matter of convenience. I mean, let's go back to the example of the water bottle. Maybe it's easier to buy the water bottle every time you're going to class instead of going out of your way to find the refillable station and then going to class, right? And that convenience, I think, is what you're trying to get at with the self-focused intentions of your purchases and your actions, right? It's almost like a three-step process instead of that one step. And especially Generation Z, that instant gratification, right? With social media and the internet, we're definitely used to everything coming to us within a second. And that obviously, as we've spoken about before, the climate crisis is not going to take a second to solve. And it also doesn't take one individual. So it needs to be a collective effort. For sure. So I definitely understand what you mean by that. So how would you convince or encourage students to get involved with ecological initiatives?
What I have found over the past 2 years about trying to get people involved is people aren't going to get involved if they don't want to. And you can't force information upon someone. It's like telling someone that has some sort of like alcoholism, like they're not going to want to get help until they ask for it. So I definitely think I'm going to provide the information. It'll always be there. I'm going to try my best to get everything on campus and have fun giveaways, things, prizes, like all of those fun things to get people more involved. But essentially I can say it 1,000 times to one person, but if they don't want to hear it, they're not going to listen. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point of specifically in Canada, we're not seeing, let's shrink it down. In Ontario, where we are, Waterloo, we're not seeing the severe impacts like the flooding in BC, right? It's easier for us to turn our backs and to say, well, it's not affecting me right now. So I need to focus on what's right in front of me, yeah. Right? So what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree? Do you disagree?
That's huge. If it doesn't directly impact you, why bother caring?
Right.
And that's a big thing that people have to get across is why should we care when it does not directly affect you? Because when it directly affects you, it's over. We can't, there's nothing much that you can do left.
Right.
So.
But I mean, a counter argument to that is that it's December 5th when living in the snow belt and there's no snow.
Oh.
Right. So that is, and everyone's like, great, this is fantastic. No snow. The no, guys, because
not how it's supposed to be.
Not how it's supposed to work. Exactly. So yeah. If that's a wake up call for a few people, maybe that's something that will have more people listening to you and listening to that information that you have available. Where can people find that information? Are they going to try and contact you? Are they trying to email you? Where can we look to your guidance, Caitlin?
Well, I think You can definitely email me, but I do not want 1,000 emails in my inbox. I think the biggest thing, especially going forward for next semester, is on campus, we're going to strive to have a lot more informational posters up, a lot more boothing done in the concourse. In January, actually, we're going to do like a new year, new me campaign idea, with just having different businesses come into the concourse and sharing information as how you can be sustainable with makeup, or how you can properly dispose of your waste, and information about composting and recycling in the Waterloo region, as well as how can you buy food more sustainable. So those ideas is what we're striving to focus on in January, because a lot of times people are trying to like do so many great things. So I think that's our first goal for January. And then what we've had last Friday, actually, we had a Tech for Trees Day where I bought a bunch of plants. I bought like spider plants, English ivies, and pothos. I said, bring me your old technology and you can get a plant. So I had so many people come up to the booth saying, hey, how can I get a plant? Because they're great. I'm like, bring me something. So I'd have people coming from the door saying, I have a couple batteries. I'm like, that is perfect.
Amazing.
But yeah, the amount of involvement that we got just from that event was phenomenal. So I think we're going to do something like that again in the new year. I think I think people really want to be sustainable. They just don't know where to start as well.
Exactly. And that was the next point that I was going to bring up too, is that the eco-anxiety and the seeing it all over social media, and it seems very daunting. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of different ways that we've even listed today that people can start at, right? So where do you think a student should start making that small change? Is it the easiest way? Is it the biggest way? Do we start big and then go small? What is your thoughts on that? How can one student start making a difference in the bigger picture of the climate crisis?
I think for me, at least, I found it so overwhelming by all the information that was spread. I just started really, really small and I bought a water bottle.
Yeah.
The simplest things. And like, and then I bought like some reusable bags. And people they shouldn't have to feel like they have to do everything sustainable. If buying a reusable water bottle or bringing reusable grocery bags is all that you can do, you are doing something more than nothing. Like, no one's expecting you to go off the grid, but making those small changes that you are able to do in everyday life, so it's not going to impact you negatively or financially, those are definitely the things that I think are the very first steps. What is something small that you can do that's not overwhelming? What's something that you can easily incorporate in your routine, in your everyday life, that will not negatively impact you?
Right. So I love that your first way was to find reusable products. That's awesome. Another way, and this is more personal to me, is this year I started really cooking for myself and making those grocery store purchases. I think that's something that students tend to go for the cheapest thing and maybe meal prep or something like that. I think if you go into the grocery store with a list, right? I think just a grocery store list, that is you making a conscious effort to not buy too many products and not contribute to so much food waste that we have going on, right? It's that supply and demand chain. If we don't demand as much product, less will be made. And then that means that it will be more sustainable. So I think that that's another way that students can really get involved, and just making that small difference at the grocery store.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on to part three of the interview. So moving forward, can you name a strong eco-friendly role model that you may have either internationally or at Laurier, and explain why they inspire you?
I think my biggest role models is the people on my committee. I see so many people that are so much more eco-friendly than I am, and I strive to be like them. I don't know anyone. I'm sure there's lots. I am not super big on looking at big leaders in different platforms, I get overwhelmed. So most of my, I guess,
Inspiration.
Yes. Most of my inspiration has pretty much just come from my peers on my committee, as well as I think my mom, because she's the one that, you know, uses reusable bags. She's the one that always makes homemade meals for me. So I think looking at it in that way, that she does so much more than what I guess maybe a different typical household would in that situation. Right. So no one super big that I aspire to be like, but I think just, yeah, my peers.
Yeah. And that's a great point of, there's a human condition to want to fit in, right? And to mold with all the people around you. Some may call it, quote, peer pressure. But having other people reflect those values is going to make you want to be more sustainable in your own life. And I think that's, it's almost maybe competitive, right? Subconsciously to be like, oh, she has a really cool reusable water bottle. I'm definitely going to get one of those. Right. And to be included in those conversations with your peers and, you know, be part of that movement is something that you can make friends even doing, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Healthy peer pressure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Healthy peer pressure. Yeah. So we're talking about how much information there is out there. We're talking about how much information there is out there. Can you list maybe some sources, blogs, podcasts, or maybe a book that really helped you get started in your sustainability path, or that can guide students to get educated on the issue of climate change? Because there's a lot of misinformation out there. So maybe where can students start getting a little bit more information about this and gaining knowledge about this issue?
For sure. So I definitely think first steps would just strictly be social media. There is a lot of really good eco-friendly tips or sustainability tips that I follow on Instagram that just help spread awareness as, hey, instead of doing this, do this. It's just super easy changes that just help you think about things that I use all the time. I think that for me is the most effective way. Another resource that I've loved is documentaries. I like in my spare time, if I'm watching something, it's always some kind of nature documentary or like Seaspiracy or Cowspiracy or anything like along those lines that just spread information in that way. As far as like, I guess, official resources go, I look a lot to the UN, United Nations stuff, just to see where they're standing and their political platforms lead and how their goals along those lines. That's just if I'm essentially just curious about what's going on in the world. That's kind of my first step where I go. But yeah.
Yeah. And the United Nations is a great tool, right? Because they have so many different resolutions that are available online to just review. They're also summarized all over the place on the internet. If they're too broad or too big terms, too big of a document for someone to read, maybe on a train, just to pass the time. So I totally understand looking towards the summaries, but that's a really good indication as to where our world is coming to a compromise on something like the climate crisis, right? Where are we all agreeing and where are we disagreeing? And seeing those kind of, and that's an international level, but even having that knowledge is going to help you as an individual try to guide through this crisis. Because it's something that it's like the pandemic, where the climate crisis cannot be escaped by anyone. Right. Would you agree with that? Is that something that affects every individual, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Everyone's affected by it.
Yeah, no matter where you are in the world, it's something that brings us all together. And it's a global issue. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's unfortunately a rarity in politics is or maybe fortunately, depending on how you look at it. But it is it's something that we can all find that commonality in, for sure. And I love that you plugged social media, but can you please plug Eagle Hawk social media and where someone can find you guys on social media or on Laurier websites?
Yeah, so our social media is WU_EagleHawks_W. That's where we primarily post all of our information, as well as different sustainability tips and sustainability things that our campus is taking part in, things that you can do with little did you know facts. We're also posting all of our future events and information that we want to share with everyone on there as well. So that's our biggest source of communication with the community. So definitely looking out there.
Yes. Awesome. So that's on Instagram, and you guys have a Facebook?
We do have a Facebook. We also have a Twitter.
Okay.
We have found with the Laurier marketing team, there's been a couple studies done that show that there isn't as much reach with Facebook or Twitter anymore. So we primarily focus all of our time and effort on our Instagram.
Amazing. So people need to go follow that Instagram.
Yeah.
Got it. And then any upcoming events? I know you previewed that you just had one last Friday, but is there any upcoming events to look forward to that you guys are hosting? And when would those events take place? Maybe in the new year?
Yes. So I was actually brainstorming yesterday of the events that we're going to do.
Fabulous.
I will tell you. So yeah, our biggest event, our most upcoming event, is our New Year, New Me campaign. That is going to be January 28th from 11 to 1 in the concourse. Our next event is part of the Students Union Sexy Week. We're definitely going to be partnering probably with one of the committees on campus, and we're going to be promoting different sustainable ways and DIY projects that you can do for Sexy Week. We are also planning on doing another Tech for Trees Day because it was so successful and a lot of people loved it. So that will probably be the last full week of March. So March 21st, 25th week, we don't have a certain day yet.
Right.
And then, of course, we do our St. Paddy's and homecoming cleanups. So this year, St. Paddy's is on March 18th. So we'll be doing a cleanup March 19th as well.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that's a great way to guilt-free that weekend. That's awesome.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing that students can get involved in that we have coming up is our sustainability week. So that is February 28th week. So every day we're going to be doing a different sustainability activity. Like, we're going to be doing like a movie night. I think we're watching like The Lorax one night.
Amazing.
Scavenger hunt about different eco-friendly things on campus to get like little tickets and win awesome prizes. We're doing like DIY like tote bags and all the super fun stuff. So that'll be the biggest week that we will have to get involved and spread information.
So that will be the week after Reading Week.
Yes.
Fabulous. Yeah, that sounds like there's a lot of great activities that will, spark interest in a lot of variety of people. So that sounds like a great way the students can get involved with you guys.
Yeah.
And you did mention once that you did have to apply to be a member on the Eagle Hawks. Is that still mandated? Do people have to wait until next year to be involved, or they can go to the events without being a part of the Eagle Hawks?
Yeah, so you can go to all of the events without being a part of Eagle Hawks. We're going to have them open for the Laurier community.
Awesome.
You do have to apply still. It's on like the hiring and recruitment page that Laurier has. We will be posting applications for general members, executives, and for a coordinator role, I think sometime after February. Don't quote me on that, but sometime after the new year for the following year. So the start date would be either May 1st, 2022 in that area for the following year. So yeah, there's an application for that.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Caitlin. This has been a really interesting conversation. And thank you so much to Eco Hawks for talking to us today. And I hope that it encourages students to get involved in something new.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Golden Hawks, that concludes this episode of The Political Impact. Thank you so much again for listening. I hope that the conversation with coordinator from WLU Eco Hawks, Caitlin Ricks, helps some of you learn some more sustainable practices that we can include in our everyday lives, and also encourages us to be a part of the solution of the climate crisis. I know that the issue can feel large and daunting, but it is something that we all have a part in. Participating in and being aware of our actions is something that we can strive to be better at and do better for our planet. Once again, thank you so much for listening. I'm Kelsey Hickman, and remember, your voice matters.